Welcome to the Dr. Gundry podcast, the weekly podcast where Dr. G gives you the tools you need to boost your health and live your healthiest life.
Haven't made any New Year's resolutions yet? Perhaps you don't even know where to start. Or maybe the idea of making resolutions makes you break out in a sweat because you're afraid you'll fail and disappoint yourself. I get it, but not to worry. Because like I always say, it's never too late to start reclaiming your well-being. So even though we're well into January, it's not too late to put a plan in action that will give you maximum results that you're going to love with minimal effort. Today I'm going to share simple tools to make real lasting changes. I'll also reveal the worst resolutions to make and the best ones, with simple lifestyle tweaks for the healthiest, most fulfilled, and exciting life. No matter what time of year it is, this information will empower you to start making what you want to happen today. We'll be right back. There are really a few more tips for really making those goals stick. Plan ahead. Making a list New Year's Day because you have to isn't the best way to make lasting change. Instead, start today and give yourself a week in January too. It's always better to have a well thought out plan than to just throw something together, especially when it comes to your health. Don't make a list, make a plan. Sure, it's great fun to say I'm going to lose 30 pounds, or I'm going to run a marathon, or I'm going to learn to cook. But without a plan, that's all just talk. So set those goals. But then break down what you'll need to get there and make those smaller steps part of your resolution. That way you feel accomplished for checking off little things and you've got an easy to follow guide to reaching your goals. So instead of run a marathon, start with buy running shoes or run or just walk a mile, then maybe 5 miles, then maybe find a training plan. You'll feel accomplished each time you have something you can cross off the list, and it'll keep you going. Track your progress. If you measure it, you can change it. It's true of weight loss, of learning to play an instrument, and even of fitness. For every big goal you've got this year, come up with measurable, trackable ways to reach them, whether it's 1.5 pounds loss or holding a plank for a minute, and track your progress. Tracking will also help you identify sticking points so you can adjust your efforts and change things up if you need to. Write it down and put it where you can see it. Having your resolution listed on a page in a notebook or a note on your phone is a good start, but that only goes so far. Try posting your resolution and your plan for meeting it on your refrigerator, front door, somewhere you'll see it every day. I even know someone who wrote it on their bathroom mirror in dry erase marker. What a good reminder while brushing your teeth. Another good tip, set a calendar reminder to bug you about that goal each week. Last but not least, make it fun. Otherwise, you're never going to do it. No, you can't always make eating healthy fun. But maybe going on a farmer's market date with a friend would be fun and inspire you to try new veggies. Or maybe you want to get fit, but going to the gym sounds like hell. Take a dance class, go hiking, or volunteer to walk dogs at a local shelter. You know, if they pull a lot, it's an arm workout too. And for something like getting organized, it may be a little harder to find fun. But a bouquet of fresh flowers in a nicely cleaned room is always nice. You get the idea. Do little things to bring you joy, and it'll make those resolutions a game, not a chore. And whatever you do, don't beat yourself up if you flounder. It happens. Just get back on track the next day, and you'll be fine. And finally, remember what Yoda would say for your New Year's resolution. Try not. Do or do not. There is no try. 3 New Year's resolutions you should never make. Number 1, I'm going to join a gym.
Most people go to a gym for a couple of times after plucking down their money and never go back. Gyms depend on this. Don't go to a gym. Instead, find something to do that you really enjoy doing and that you'll stick with. For instance, walk your dog. You'll save the dog's life, but more importantly, walking the dog every day will save your life, and it's a lot better for everybody than a gym membership. The second big mistake is trying to get the weight off fast. As I like to say, weight off fast will never last. Weight off slow, you're good to go. You have to learn new habits to keep weight off. You can absolutely lose 20 pounds, but you never instill a new habit, and pretty soon your weight is ballooned 25 pounds up. 16 years ago, I changed my habits, and I've kept 70 pounds off for the last 16 years simply by changing my habits. And my motto is, 1 pound per week can't be beat. The third problem with New Year's resolutions is that most people make short-sighted goals. The problem is, what do you do when you attain your goal? Let's suppose you want to lose 20 pounds. Well, you lose it. What then? That's when the problem happens. So what you want to do is not aim for a goal, but to plan a journey that's sustainable for great health for the rest of your life. The key is if you're not enjoying the ride, none of this is worthwhile. Today, I'm talking about New Year's resolutions and which will make the most dramatic impact for the least amount of effort. Sounds good? Well, let's dive right in. Okay, number one, this seems self-explanatory, but resolution number one is move more. Now, if you don't exercise at all, take the challenge to start small with 5 to 10 minutes of exercise per day. Even if that's just walking around the block or dancing to one entire song, like I talk about in The Energy Paradox, it's a great start. Then slowly increase your workout time every week. So if you commit to 5 to 10 minutes per day, increase your movement to 7 to 12 minutes per day the next week, and so on, until you're working up to about 30 minutes a day, even if it's just 10-minute exercise bouts 3 times a day. And here's the deal. If you're going to the office and you live in a multi-storied office building, don't beat yourself up that you got to climb up the 4 stairs to your office. Take the elevator up, but walk the stairs down. Beautiful experiments that I've alluded to from Austria allowed people to either take the cable car up to the top of the mountain and walk down, or walk to the top of the mountain and take the cable car down. And lo and behold, they found that either way got the same beneficial results. Anytime you walk against gravity, up against it or down against it, you'll get a huge amount of benefit. And as most of you know, one of the unique unifying features of all the Blue Zones is that they all live in hilly communities. And so just go walk. And another great idea to make you move, like I always say, is get a dog. Preferably a rescue dog. Get a rescue dog. You'll benefit them. They'll benefit you. I just actually gave a prescription again to one of my new patients this week to go get a dog. And last week, one of my patients who I had given a prescription to a couple months ago brought in their new rescue dog, and it was a great little dog. So, get a dog. Now, even if you can't have a dog, consider volunteering at these shelters. I can tell you they need volunteers, and you'll get working with the dogs out in their runs, and you'll benefit, the dog will benefit,
And who knows, you might take one home. Now, if you already have a good exercise routine in place, look for opportunities to get even more movement for throughout the day, not just once a day. And I talk a lot about this in the energy paradox, and I call it energy snacking, exercise snacking. So, you know, take the stairs for a few minutes. I know this sounds trite. Park your car way away from where you're going into a store. My wife and I just actually did this 2 weeks ago at Costco, and I was grumbling the whole time. But in fact, it was a brilliant way to get in, you know, about a 5 minute walk in the Costco parking lot. One of my favorite tricks is do squats when you're brushing your teeth morning and night. You're not doing anything for a minute or two except brushing. So just do deep knee bends. Do it while you're washing dishes. Do it while you're folding laundry. Any opportunity to sit up and squat and stand up is a great opportunity to get some exercise snacking done. Now, they may seem insignificant, but there's multiple studies showing that these little 1 to 2 minute bursts of exercise can have just as much impact as 10 to 20 minutes of exercise in a continuous fashion. So any time you get your muscles moving is a good time. All right, second project, improve your metabolic flexibility. Did you know that roughly 98% of obese people have zero metabolic flexibility? Now, what the heck is metabolic flexibility? And that's not the ability to bend over and touch your toes. Metabolic flexibility means normally the mitochondria that live in almost all of our cells, those little organelles that make ATP, the energy currency, they can make ATP by using glucose or amino acids, protein, or fat, free fatty acids, to generate ATP. But they can't do it simultaneously. Now, most of the time, mitochondria like to burn glucose to make ATP. But if glucose isn't available, then just like a hybrid car, a mitochondria should be able to, on a dime, switch over to burning free fatty acids as a fuel. Or the brain can burn the equivalent ketones as a fuel. But what is sadly missing in Americans in particular is that the vast majority of overweight and obese people, in fact, almost all obese people, cannot flip the switch when glucose runs out. Now, what does that mean? Well, it literally means that our brains, for instance, if glucose is no longer available, if you stop eating and 12 hours pass, in the middle of the night, your brain, which normally should be now running on ketones, instead, there are no ketones to use, you can't make them, and you can't burn any fuel. And so your neurons literally start to die. They not only start to die in your heart, in your brain, they start to die in your heart, they start to die in your liver, they start to die in your kidneys. And so it's actually no wonder that we're seeing this epidemic of kidney failure, liver failure, heart failure, brain failure, which we call dementia, or Parkinson's, or Alzheimer's. It's because our bodies no longer can make this switch between fuels that's actually so dependent on good functioning. So the vast majority of you who are overweight and obese, I got news for you. You cannot make that switch. And slowly, surely, progressively, cells that you really want are dying. They're starving to death. Okay, so how do we get our metabolic flexibility back? Well, that's what I spend most of my practice with my patients, teaching them how to do. And, you know, as you know, I explain this in great detail in my book, The Energy Paradox. But I've created a very slow, gentle program to retrain your mitochondria to become metabolically flexible. And it really only takes about 6 weeks. So one of the most empowering things that you can do, and I want you to start January 1st, is shortening the time of day that you eat to about 6 to 8 hours. Now, what does that mean? It means that if I asked you on January 1st not to eat breakfast, break fast until noon, the vast majority of us would fall flat on our face because we couldn't burn fats as a fuel. And we would get hangry, we'd get headaches, we'd get weak, and we'd fail miserably because the vast majority of us can't do that. But almost every one of us, if, say, we eat breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning, can make it till 8 o'clock in the morning and still do okay. So as I talk about in the Energy Paradox and soon in Unlocking the Keto Code, the first week, I want you to eat breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning, all week. Take the weekend off. Then next week, I want you to move your breakfast to 9 o'clock that week. And for 5 days, eat breakfast at 9 o'clock, take the weekend off. Week 3, we're going to eat breakfast, break fast, at 10 o'clock. We're going to do that for 5 days, take the weekend off. And so on. As you can see, in 5 weeks, you'll be eating break fast at noon, at lunch. And you're going to get there gradually. It's exactly like starting any other exercise program. I got news for you. Unless you practice, you're not going to go out and run a 5K or a 10K or a marathon, just walk running out the door. You have to build up to that. And it's the same way with metabolic flexibility. You have to build up to making your mitochondria flexible again. And this program slowly but surely asks your mitochondria and learn how to switch between burning sugar for fuel and burning fat for fuel. Now, the great news is, by the end of 5 to 6 weeks, this will become second habit. And programs that have been done in humans, and certainly in my practice, if we give you the ability to relax on the weekends, anybody can do this for 5 days in a row, and it makes it a habit that you can live with, literally and figuratively. Okay, so that's getting your metabolic flexibility back, and it's absolutely important. Long-term health of every part of you. All right, third project. I want you to really start thinking about limiting or even eliminating red meat. Now, most Americans have red meat almost every single day, from burgers to steak to bacon to pork chops, you name it. It's part of our American diet. And don't get me wrong, I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. There's several bad things that happen, and it has nothing to do with cruelty to animals. We're not going to go down that road today. But I'm talking about cruelty to ourselves, our animal that we are. First of all, as many of you know who've read my books, beef, lamb, and pork all contain a sugar molecule in their blood vessels that's called NU5GC. Humans, fish, and poultry have a different sugar molecule called NU5AC. It turns out that those sugar molecules are very, very similar, but we make an antibody to Nu5GC when we eat these animals. And that antibody is very interested in the sugar molecule in us. And there's very good data that the reason there's more heart disease among red meat eaters is that we actually have an autoimmune attack on our blood vessels. The other worrisome factor is that cancer cells use Nu5GC to hide from our immune system. Now, there's a problem. We don't manufacture Nu5GC. So the only way a cancer cell can acquire Nu5GC is for you to eat it. So think about that the next time you're having a juicy steak or a burger or keto bacon. You're actually eating a sugar molecule that gives cancer cells in you an advantage to evade your immune system. Puts bacon in a whole new...
Do you see the deals on these brands? Of course you can't. This is a podcast. But when you go to Ross this spring, you'll see brands you know at prices you love. We're talking all the shoes, hues, and oohs at 20 to 60% off department store prices. Go see the savings at Ross.
Light. Now, the other thing that's important about animal proteins in general is the development of advanced glycation end products, which are better known as ages, because advanced glycation end products age us. There are two contributing factors to developing ages in us, and we do it 24 hours a day, folks. The amount of sugars that we eat, and the amount of protein that we eat. And these sugars and proteins are actually bonded together in the presence of heat, and I got news for you, there's heat in our bodies, to create one of the strongest chemical bonds that's ever been described, which is advanced glycation end products, ages. We actually measure a blood test for how many ages are occurring in you, and that's hemoglobin A1C. And that actually looks at how many of these compounds you're generating for about the 2 months prior to the test. We have a recent test that's either called fructosamine or glycated proteins, there's that word glycation, that looks for about 2 weeks of how many sugars and proteins you're eating. And I can tell you my patients are flabbergasted now that we've been using that test routinely to see in the 2 weeks prior to their blood test the amount of glycated proteins present in their bloodstream. And this is going on whether we know it or not. And these things make us stiff. It stiffens our heart muscle. It stiffens our joints. These things occur in our brain, and I don't particularly want a stiff brain. So there's some pretty powerful reasons that we should at least lessen the contribution of animal proteins into our diet. All right, so how do we do that? Well, swap out red meat portions for grass-fed, grass-finished poultry. We're beginning to find it more readily available. Granted, it's still hard to find. Or better yet, wild-caught fresh seafood or shellfish. There's actually plenty of available frozen wild shrimp at markets like Trader Joe's. At Costco, there's wild frozen salmon pieces at Costco. This is becoming much more easier to find. Now, the other important thing is, let's think about portion size. really, you only need about a 4-ounce piece of animal protein in 24 hours. That's about the size of a deck of cards. If you want to use the palm of your hand and the thickness of the palm of your hand, that's okay. And guys who are giant football players, your palm doesn't count. But the more we can kind of think about diminishing that portion, the better. Often when my wife and I are at a restaurant, we'll split the fish portion. And there's still plenty for both of us. The other thing to remember is, I want you to think about eating for two people simultaneously. I want you to think about eating for your pleasure, your taste buds, as one for me. And then I want you to think about two for them. So for every bite of animal protein, I want you to take two bites of plant fibers for them, the more important guys, your microbiome. So yeah, you know, have a piece of animal protein if you want, but make sure that the vast majority of what's going through your mouth is actually going for the real workers, and that's your microbiome. So I don't want you to give things up, but I want you to make room in your stomach and in your intestines for what really matters. And you'll do yourself a favor in two ways. When I was growing up, we actually used to have meatless Mondays or Tuesdays, where the whole nation would give up meat. And there was a lot of pasta, I can tell you, but it doesn't have to be a pasta dish to replace. But start with one day a week where you just don't eat any animal protein. It's really easy to do. If you can't do that, then one day a week, give up, you know, beef, lamb, or pork for one day a week and work your way down. Now, for me personally, I eat red meat or poultry actually a few times a quarter, and I have shellfish often on the weekends. But the rest of my week is pressure cooked legumes, lectin-free grains like sorghum and millet, tons of vegetables, and of course, everything is smothered in olive oil, including the shellfish, including the poultry. And it's a great way to go. So just challenge yourself at the start of the new year, at least one day a week, just eliminate animal protein and see how you do. Restaurants. Restaurants, as you know, I'm friends with many James Beard Award-winning chefs, and they will tell me, and they will tell you, that they tend to give you, as the showcase of the meal, a large protein, animal protein portion. And that's where they make their money, that's where they make the name. They actually tell me that they have much more fun doing appetizers and vegetable dishes where they can actually be far more creative. So what I'd like you to do is look at all the greens, look at all the fresh vegetable appetizers, choose those and build a meal around those. And we call it grazing. And if you follow me to a restaurant, you'll see often that the grazing is most of the meal. And my wife and I may have four vegetable dishes that we share and one fish dish that we split, or not even a fish dish. So just think about maximizing your options in a restaurant. They're actually hidden there for you. Okay, next project, monitoring your health. Now, most of us have been told we got to track our spending habits. You're much more likely to be committed to your health goals if you're accountable for tracking those. And one of the best ways to monitor this progress is a fitness health tracker. There are wonderful devices on the market. I like the Aura Ring and the Whoop Band. My Whoop Band's hiding under here. Just got my new next generation Whoop and Aura Rings, and they both get better and better. The Apple Watch is good. It's a good fitness tracker. There's lots of other really good fitness trackers. Fitbit, just as an example. Polar makes some great fitness trackers. Get one and just start using it. Now, they're not perfect. They're not 100% accurate. They're, how shall I say, designed to over-reward your effort. So don't necessarily believe the number of steps that are real. But they're great for looking at trends. And they're great for a lot of these devices now give you feedback. And they applaud you and give you, great job. And they're very useful and they're fun to play with. The other thing that's really fun to play with is try varying your activity and then looking at your sleep patterns. I can tell you for one that when Penny and I were out hiking 10 to 16 miles a day in the mountains of Italy last month, that my heart rate variability, which I track on both the Aura and the Whoop Band, went up, and it's not going to mean anything to you, to about 150 to 170, whereas my normal heart rate variability during normal working is maybe 70 to 90. And if I take the dogs, for instance, on a longer walk, say a 3.5 mile walk instead of a 2 mile walk, lo and behold, my heart rate variability that next night will be much higher than if I took them on a 2 mile walk, which would be normal. The point of all this is there's very, very, very good, strong evidence that the more heart rate variability you have, not only the longer you live, but the longer you live well. And so if for no other reason, start tracking your heart rate variability and start watching whether it corresponds to your activity level. And if it does, talk about a motivator. Let's get out there and walk. Okay, remember, why do we want to invest in these things? Well, just like you'd invest in your bank account or your stock market, this is the only house you're ever going to live in, as far as we know. And so if we spent the amount of time and attention into taking care of this that we do to our homes, that we do to our bank account, that we do to our credit rating, imagine the possibilities. And that's how we got to approach this house. All right. Also, more and more insurance companies are now offering discounts or even free fitness trackers if you sign up for their health programs. So check that out too. And if you're a senior, a number of the Medicare programs now offer free gym memberships. They vary depending on what program you sign up for, but it's free. Take advantage of it. Okay, you can't afford a fitness tracker. I understand. Get a journal and just write down how far you walked. You know how long a block is. And just track your progress. And even just journaling still works really well. Okay, next project for the new year. I've alluded to this already. Fill up on fiber. Did you know that 98% of Americans are walking around starving their gut buddies to death? That means that 98% of Americans are not getting enough fiber or prebiotic fiber into their diet. Now, did you know that just committing to supplement with fiber daily can make a dramatic impact on your overall health? You get the fiber of your choice, but please, 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 don't look for insoluble fiber. Insoluble fiber comes primarily from whole grains. And if you see grains as the source of fiber, like in wheat, like in oats, like in barley, like in rye, run the other way. That's not the fiber that your gut buddies want. Instead, they want soluble fiber. Soluble fiber is in root vegetables, for instance. It's in the chicory family of vegetables, like Belgian endive, like radicchio. Almost every grocery store now has that round red and white head of what looks like lettuce. That's radicchio, and it's fantastic. And believe me, your gut buddies think it's the best thing in the world. The cruciferous vegetables are full of fiber. I just had a bunch of Brussels sprouts. Pressure-cooked lentils and pressure-cooked beans have very important fiber, and the pressure cooking destroys the lectins, so they're safe. For instance, Thursday night, I had, Wednesday night, I had pressure-cooked Bertolli beans from Jovial and Brussels sprouts and olive oil. That was my dinner. And I mixed it all together, and it was phenomenal. Put in a bunch of Tuscan Italian herbs on it and went to town. And that was dinner. Now, who benefited most? I can tell you. First of all, my taste buds were really happy. But more importantly, my gut buddies were so delighted that I can tell you that, and I've talked about this before, you should have seen the anaconda in the toilet bowl today. Magnificent. Terry Walls would be so impressed. Okay, that's what we're talking about, taking care of them. Now, Jerusalem artichokes, we're seeing those more and more in grocery stores. Mushrooms, a great source of prebiotic fiber. And the prebiotic fibers in mushrooms actually strengthens your immune system. Garlic, onions, leeks. As you know, we feature leeks a lot. So get these guys into your diet. And again, if you take away nothing from this entire hour, think about, okay, I'm going to eat one thing for my taste buds, and I'm going to eat two things for my gut buddies. And if you can just kind of follow that rule, you can make a huge change in your health in the coming year without making drastic steps. So this year, let's make some tiny changes that we can live with. And you watch these tiny changes become slowly part of your routine. And it takes about 6 weeks to develop a new habit. But once that habit is developed, it's actually very hard to break. All right.
This week's audience question comes from Todd Gee on Instagram. Can you eat too many fermented foods where it becomes unhealthy? If so, how do I know or what symptoms are there if I eat too many? Well, that's actually a really good question, Todd. Some people notice when they first starting eating a lot of fermented foods that they seem to get a lot of gas and bloating, quite uncomfortable at times. Now, that's because a lot of these fermented foods have living bacteria and also postbiotics that can add gas. So, no, you can't eat too many fermented foods. In fact, the more the better. In fact, my new book is going to go even into more detail on why the more the better of fermented foods. But for now, start slowly and work your way up. This week's review of the week comes from BFA on YouTube. I got two of your books, seen hours of your videos, and Googled a lot of your recommendations to find out the Norwegian name on different products. You have helped me a lot and changed my life for the better. I wish Norwegian doctors could also start listening to you. Thank you for what you are doing. Well, thank you, BFA. I think translated into 36 foreign languages for The Plant Paradox and many others for the other books. And they're doing that because people all over the world need this information. Interestingly, Norwegians in general have some of the best health in the world, but you can never have more and better health. Let me know that this is working for you and tell your doctors to start reading.
Thank you for listening to the Dr. Gundry Podcast. For the latest updates on new episodes that come out each week, make sure you hit the follow button on the Dr. Gundry Podcast on whichever platform you use, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. Because I'm Dr. Gundry, and I'm always looking out for you.